Thank you for tuning in to CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Democracy Watch, the News Collective's weekly, hour-long news report, bringing you alternative and undercovered current affairs coverage from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. I'm Alamdi Alanion.
I'm Ryan Patrick Jones.
And I'm Alex DeBoer. It's Thursday, January 11th at 5.03 p.m. We're broadcasting from UBC's Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territory.
Hi, this is Chris Connolly from
of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Today on Democracy Watch, we bring you original reporting from a public hearing held by the Vancouver City Council on Tuesday night. The hearing was held to address the development of a housing complex at 58 West Hastings. It heard comment from those for and against the existing development proposal. The current proposal includes a mix of social and affordable housing, contrary to Mayor Gregor Robertson's 2016 promise to build 100% social housing at the site. Today's Democracy Watch will also discuss confusion surrounding two Facebook events that appear affiliated with the Women's March happening this Saturday, January 20th. Democracy Watch gives you the lowdown on which event is real and which is fake. But first, headlines from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland.
A 15-year-old Coquitlam boy died Monday after being caught in the crossfire of a gunfight last Saturday night. Suspected gang shooting took place at East Broadway near Ontario Street took place last Saturday night. Alfred Wong was driving home after an evening out with his family when a stray bullet struck him. He was taken to the hospital and was in critical condition until Monday when his family decided to take him off life support. Police investigation underway involving over 50 officers. The suspected target of the shooting has also died. No shooter is suspected at the moment.
There's been a record number of overdose deaths in Vancouver in 2017, according to a press release from the City of Vancouver. So, data for 2017 shows an estimated 335 overdose deaths compared to 234 in 2016. That's an average of about 6 people per week. The second half of the year saw a lower death rate compared to the first half, but 2017's total was still 43% higher than the total deaths in 2016. The total number of deaths for the province of British Columbia will be released in a report by the BC Coroner Service at the end of the month.
Amazon headquarters will not be coming to Vancouver. Amazon released a 20-city shortlist of cities still being considered for the location of its second headquarters. Both Vancouver and Surrey submitted proposals. Both did not make the shortlist. The only Canadian city on this list is Toronto. Two-thirds of the cities on the list are east, suggesting Vancouver's geography might have been a factor. The headquarters, too, is expected to bring up to $5 billion and 50,000 jobs. Might be a good thing for Vancouver, given the state of real estate here, that it was not added to the list.
Cool. Thank you, Alex. The median price of a one-bedroom apartment in Vancouver rises to $2,000 per month, second to only Toronto. The rental site PadMapper's monthly analysis of average rent prices in Canada's major cities is where we got this from. The site announced January 16 that Vancouver's median one-bedroom rent has risen 0.5% since December's analysis and 5.3% since January 2017.
So I guess Vancouver is no longer the most expensive city to live in if you're renting a one-bedroom apartment. All right, next up, the Vancouver Aquarium is ending the captivity of whales and dolphins, claiming that the debate has hindered conservation work. Last spring, the Vancouver Park Board voted to end the introduction of any new whales and dolphins to the aquarium after more discussion on the ethics of keeping animals in captivity has increased. CEO John Nightingale stated he would fight to the end against this ban. His change of heart is said to be the result of the aquarium's conservation efforts being hindered by the ongoing debate. Since the decision to end captivity, two of the aquarium's three cetaceans have died, leaving a Pacific white-sided dolphin by herself. Nightingale adds that the decision to end captivity will not hinder the aquarium's work in rescuing stranded and distressed whales and dolphins.
City Council approved the Women's Equity Strategy on Wednesday. This 10-year strategy is meant to make Vancouver a fairer, safer, and more welcoming place for women, including those who identify as women. According to a press release from the City of Vancouver, Vision Councillor Andrea Reimer called this a big step forward for women in Vancouver. The goals of this strategy are to apply an intersectional lens to policymaking in Vancouver, to take extra steps to ensure the safety of women, as well as to create safe and affordable housing, to improve accessibility to childcare, especially affordable childcare, and to increase the number of women in positions of leadership. A number of actions have also been identified to make progress towards these goals.
Yeah, this is a pretty important development. Do you think we should discuss it some more?
I think myself and Ryan had a chance to look over the strategy that was released by the city. It's very aesthetically pleasing, we'll say that at least.
Definitely a lot of colors. They have a good graphic designer.
Good graphic design, yeah. But yeah, it has some clear strengths, which I believe include the tangible efforts the city is making to implement progressive policy within the city itself. So, for example, they're going to be implementing a breastfeeding policy for, like, city staff. So that's really cool. They also intend to create more positions of leadership within the city. I'm just looking at my notes here. The city wants to increase new hires for senior management roles to 50%, effective immediately. So I don't know. That's going to start now, but I don't know when it should be achieved by. So those are some really positive aspects.
Yeah.
I mean, Ryan, maybe you can comment on potential weaknesses.
Even before that, I mean, I think there are more strengths. I think, applying an intersectional lens to all city decision-making is super important. I think just to be having people thinking about that before they're making decisions. I mean, even for me, you know, I didn't know what that word meant 5 years ago, you know? And so I think it is, it shows progress, and I think it's important that people are thinking about these things, as well as a lot of the data collection that they're doing to better understand things like hidden homelessness among women in Vancouver, as well as the women's composition of the workforce and compensation.
But to comment on that collection of data, like, we don't really know necessarily how that's being done.
True.
So the transparency is something that we as, like, media people should be following up on. And as well, in order to put together this strategy, it says that 1,600 residents participated in the development, and this was done through both public forums and online surveys. So we were talking about before the show, you know, who was targeted in the outreach for these surveys and forums.
People that, like, do forums and surveys are more likely to be more affluent and, like, more able to use the internet, right?
So, yeah, but then again, maybe they specifically targeted, like, lower-income communities, and, like, I don't know, but that's something also to look into. Yeah, and sorry, Ryan, did I cut you off?
No, it's totally fine. I was going to say it's early days, so, you know, it's good that they're not collecting that data right now, and I think setting that goal is important, and I'm sure they have the means to do it and will develop the strategies to get it done, hopefully. But we'll definitely hold them to account and keep our eyes on it.
Yeah, we'll keep speaking truth to power.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. So Democracy Watch is just going to take a short break now that we've completed headlines. Stay tuned, and we'll be back with more coverage of local underexplored stories.
Is Koko Hamamatsu talking about koi fish in a pond, or the youth at CITR and Discorder? Get info on your wares, services, or events directly to students, musicians, artists, and all the coolest cats from Bellingham to Squamish by advertising with CITR and Discorder, on air, in print, or online. This can be your reality if you email us at advertising@citr.ca or call 604-822-4342. Visit citr.ca for rates and packages.
Gender policing, or just want to speak your truth?
Join CITR's Gender Empowerment Collective.
This group of radio makers is all about centering the voices, issues, concerns, and experiences of women identified, transgender, intersex, two-spirit, genderqueer, gender non-conforming, non-binary, and gender fluid folks and allies.
Anyone can join, no experience necessary.
Like the Gender Empowerment Collective on Facebook or email volunteer at citr.ca.
Our show, Intersections, airs Thursdays from 4 to 5 and features music, interviews, events, news, commentary, basically anything we care to talk about.
See you then.
Let's see here. God. Oh.
Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance.
Oh. Everybody. God, this is awful.
Isn't there anything? Anything? Anything?
Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Discorder magazine, or check us out online at citr.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Everybody dance. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance?
And we're back. This is Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM, the News Collective's weekly current affairs news program. We just heard headlines from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland, and we are now turning our attention to this weekend's Women's March. Last year, Vancouver Women's March saw over 15,000 people take to the streets for a variety of reasons related to gender equality and human rights. Ryan, however, of the News Collective is going to tell us a bit. However, it's probably not the right word. Ryan is going to tell us a bit about some confusion that's happening around the Women's March this weekend. There's been even controversy because there are actually two events happening at once. So could you maybe explain a bit about this, Ryan?
Yeah, for sure. So here's the breakdown. So there appear to be two women's marches happening at the exact same time and place this Saturday, January 20th, in downtown Vancouver. The first one is the Women's March 2018 on Vancouver Official. So this is a Facebook event, and it's put on by a community group titled Women's March 2018. 1,700 people have confirmed that they are going, and another 6,000 are interested. So at a first glance, it appears that this event, Women's March 2018 on Vancouver Official, is the official event. After all, they do have official in their name.
The word official.
I mean, yeah, it's legit. But there's another Facebook event happening at the exact same time called March on Vancouver, the Next Step March. So this event is put on by March on Vancouver, a well-known grassroots activist organization that organized the Me Too March in November and I'm sure has organized countless other events before. So this group has posted on their Facebook page that the Women's March, the first event that I mentioned, Women's March 2018 on Vancouver Official, is a fake event and that they have no affiliation with March on Vancouver. So that got us at here at Democracy Watch thinking, what's going on? So we kind of we started to look into it, and wow, that was a rabbit hole. But we have some information to report to you. So the first one I mentioned, Women's March 2018 on Vancouver Official, the more you look into it, it gets really fishy. So the community group that's hosting their event page only has 87 likes, suggesting that the group was created very recently. They don't seem to have done any organizing either. They haven't lined up any speakers. There's no information about, a schedule for the event. The only posts that they have are links to these online stores selling merchandise. So on first glance, it seems to me that they're kind of piggybacking on the fact that the Women's March is a recognizable event. It's a global event that everyone knows about and most people would support when they see it come up on their newsfeed. So they're using the name, according to my analysis, they're using the name Women's March to trick people into liking their page.
Well, and not only that, they're using the graphics from the international Women's March group.
Exactly. That's the second thing that's so interesting. So the branding that they're using, the graphics, the visuals on their page, as well as the merchandise that they're selling looks oddly familiar. It looks very similar to that of Women's March Global, which is the official nonprofit organization that was created in the wake of last year's march.
Is it similar or is it the same?
It is the same.
Okay.
Okay.
Interesting.
So this organization, Women's March Global, is headquartered in New York and has a Canadian chapter. Women's March Global serves as the hub for most of the women's marches happening throughout North America and the world on the weekend. And they do numerous things to further gender equality. They're a registered nonprofit organization in the States. They're really official. And according to their website, 100% of proceeds from the merch that they sell goes to benefit, the programming that they're doing. So it's reinvested into their company and into the programming. I spoke with Sarah Bingham, who is the executive director of Women's March Canada, on through a Facebook message, and she told me that Women's March Canada is not affiliated in any way with the mystery page that I mentioned earlier, the one that has the name Women's March 2018 on Vancouver Official. So it seems to me that this event, if not fake, there's definitely something fishy going on with them. They also said that they're not basically Women's March Global or Women's March Canada, the official organization, is not receiving any of the profits that is being sold on that mystery Facebook page.
And so with the merch that is being sold, you found that it is not the same merch that is being sold by the Women's March Global, right? It's just using the same graphics?
In a visual sense. I mean, the t-shirts look basically the same.
Yeah.
But in terms of connection, like the money is not going to the parent organization.
The online stores for where you would purchase this merch are not connected.
As far as I can tell.
According to Sarah Bingham?
Yeah, based on discussions with not only March Own Vancouver, but also with Women's March Canada, the executive director, Sarah Bingham. Yeah.
Okay.
They don't. So in conclusion, there is only one women's march, and it's called March on Vancouver, the Next Step March, happening this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. They've dropped the name Women's from the event name in order to be more inclusive of a diversity of voices, including trans people and others who do not identify as women. And so in my analysis, it seems that this might have confused a lot of people. Which I think is the reason that the other event kind of had a way to sneak in and attract all of these likes without people asking too many questions. Because, you know, they see on their newsfeed Women's March, they think, I support that.
Yeah.
I want to be there, right? So, again, the event this Saturday is organized by March on Vancouver in partnership with Women's March Canada, the YWCA, Care Canada, local women in crisis centers, and some other groups as well. So if I were you, I would be wary of the Facebook event, Women's March 2018 on Vancouver Official, as they seem to be selling merchandise that is not, and basically we're just unclear as to where the money from that is going.
Well, and so when you say be wary of the group, one thing to clarify, though, is that if you say click on attending or interested for that event, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Because
it's
it
the
has
same
the
march.
Exact same time.
Yeah,
it's from 10 to 1, and they both meet at Jack Poole Plaza. So, I mean, it's probably better to not click on it so as to not show support through social media, I suppose. But I guess the thing to really be wary of is to not buy merch from them, as you said, Ryan, that we don't know where that money's going.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, another thing I forgot to mention is that I reached out to them for comments several times, and we didn't receive any response. And the same thing with Women's March Canada. They were also trying to get to the bottom of who was behind this organization that was using their, you know, their branding and their logos and their colors. But they again, no response. So that's another red flag in my books.
I think this is interesting too, because when I was looking online, I saw that Women's March Global, they have kind of this really accessible instruction on how to set up a women's march in your respective city, be that anywhere in the world. So they have like a little section you can scroll down on it, and it has a few steps for organizing the march. And they have their graphics, this graphic of like a woman's head. You can take that and use it. And so I guess this kind of like open source form of activism and sharing of creative content it can be really wonderful, but it also lends itself to kind of con artists.
Yeah. Or just like people that want to take advantage of like the a wide opportunity there, right? Like it has so much like, you know, like just movement behind it. Because I remember last year it was like the Trump being elected president, right? Like there was an entire like in New York and like, you know, tiny cities all over America, you know, like some in Toronto. I think there was one here as well, right? And like all that was just like, you know, it was more of like a symbolic movement against like, you know, this like terrible year of like literally just, you know, election of a misogynistic president and then like also like, you know, the Me Too movement as well. So like this is just like, you know, just taking advantage of that, I guess, and just like trying to like gain from that as well.
I'm pretty sure that was before Me Too.
For like this year, so like this one is it's like part of like the long, like, you know, the long 2017, right?
It will be very exciting to see, especially in the States, but also here, you know, the level of support and whether that momentum continues, because I mean, I think we were all kind of blown away last year at the the march in Washington. I don't have the number on it, but it was massive. It was one of the biggest rallies that had been held in many, many years.
It was like several thousand.
Also, it'll be interesting to see whether the march in Vancouver this year addresses some of the criticisms it faced last year, such as by Black Lives Matter and other groups that were critical of the sort of white feminism that pervaded the march, and the massive supporters, a lot of like white women who came out to the march who don't come out to like Black Lives Matter events, or don't come out to say the Women's Memorial March for Indigenous missing murdered women and girls. So
kind of like a selective selective activism almost.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like Instagram feminism almost, right?
Yeah, or just, and also just white feminism, like just caring about white women's lives.
Okay.
Yeah, so. Nice.
So I guess if they were to try and address that, what would you expect to be different this year?
Well, they talk about like intersectionality, right? And just like I remember like last year they were like the pink hats, and like they're like a lot of people were like using words like uterus and like all that stuff, and like they were like really aggressively like marketing like what's called organs and anatomy and stuff, and like that's very exclusive towards like, you know, trans people and like people that don't necessarily like identify and all. Yeah, so basically it's just very like very very like exclusive. And
you mean the focus on it being a woman's march, is that what you mean?
Being well, like that a woman's that anatomy. Yeah, like the pussy hats.
I
didn't want to say
the
word because
I just said it though. But I read an article where they like a lot of marches are like not promoting those
exactly
hats.
They got a lot of backlash from that because like, you know, not all women have like
less of a focus on the female anatomy as an identifying factor with the movement. Yeah. So what else could we see maybe?
Also, it's not even so much what happens at this march, but what activism happens in all the days in between. So like people coming out, like white women or people who have privilege, not just women, but like people who have privilege coming out to support those who do not or who are marginalized in other ways, such as like Indigenous women and like their fight for justice for, as I said, missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, and like ongoing just Indigenous fights against colonialism, fights against white supremacy, like, you know, people showing up.
I remember like in I think the States, there was like on like Twitter at least, people would like complain that like they had like signs up that were like, you know, other issues like, you know, police brutality and all that stuff, and like people would try to take down their signs, right? Because they were like, this is like the women's march and we should not, like, you know, all these other issues go to the side until we figure out this issue, right?
Where was that, in New York?
I think it was in Washington or New York. So it was one of like the bigger bigger cities.
Yeah, so I mean, just looking at the speakers list right now, I can already see there's definitely a pretty broad diversity of voices. I'll just give you some examples here. We have Lorelei Williams, an Indigenous activist fighting for the rights of Indigenous women. She'll be at the march. We also have two members of Black Lives Matter who will be there as speakers. Their names are Azuka and Ariam. At the moment, I can't find their last names, but we also have Angela Marie McDougall, is a biracial Black activist born and raised in Vancouver. She is also the executive director at the Battered Women Support Services, so she'll be there. and Aline Laflamme, a Métis grandmother, pipe carrier, sun dancer, and drum maker. She was the executive director of the Aboriginal Front Door Society, and she'll be at the march as well. So, I mean, this is a promising sign. Hopefully, I mean, we'll be there on Saturday, and we'll see if it really does turn into an intersectional, inclusive, diverse event. I'm sure, I hope it will be.
Totally.
Yes, I hope so too. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. Well, good discussion, guys. And also, I would just like to say thank you to Comrade Ryan Patrick Jones for his investigative journalism on this piece. I think that you really cleared this up, you know?
Oh, you're very welcome.
It was confusing to a lot of people. We were talking about this at CITR. Like, all the staff, we were genuinely confused. So,
and actually, funny story, I was on the phone with you talking about this specifically, and yeah, people at work were also, they were saying, what were you just saying about the Women's March? Because
totally.
It seems, you know, the women, it's the big event. And so they were quite surprised to hear that there was, you know, fishiness surrounding, happening on Facebook surrounding the event.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Well.
So we're going to move on to another topic. That I'm really excited to present, a topic that Olamide has spent a lot of time editing over the last
just like
few days.
A little few hours, you know?
Just a couple, 20 minutes, 30 minutes.
And that is why he's the programmer of the week.
Oh, my goodness.
Why would you mention that?
Oh, sorry. No, we should take like 10 minutes to talk
fight
about
you.
This. So, Olamide
congratulations,
is
you deserve it.
Of Thank the week. You. Congratulations.
Whoa, don't clap, Jesus.
So anyway, go to CITR.ca and you can see the profile on him. He's great. Okay, so we're excited to present an exclusive report on a public hearing that was held at City Hall on Tuesday night, this past Tuesday. It was a very emotional evening. I was there as well as Ryan, Aiden Tong, who's not here, and Zoe Powers, who's not here. So there were four of us from Democracy Watch there reporting, which was great. So the issue at hand was the proposed development of what is currently a community garden at 58 West Hastings, which is in the downtown east side, fairly close to Main and Hastings. So the land is currently owned by the City of Vancouver, and if the development proposal that is currently being proposed to the city, if it passes, then the Vancouver Chinatown Foundation will become the new leaseholder of the lot.
There's like a long history of like struggle over like 58 West Hastings. Like the site has been vacant since 2008 when the former occupants, I think music studios, a pawn shop, a discount store, were evicted and demolished by Concord Pacific. I think they intended to sell, build market rate condos, right? And then like I think the financial crisis happened, and then like they like kind of halted stuff. And I remember there was like a lot of mobilization. I know people were like really angry about that a little bit. And then like in 2010, Olympic planners, you know, designated it as a parking and storage space for the games. But then activists took it over, and then it became part of the high profile Olympic tent city. In 2011, the city essentially offered like Concord Pacific like a land swap with another site, and it raised expectations because now it belongs to the city, right? That like the site will be used for social / affordable housing, right? And like I know if it gets approved, right? Like they would, I guess it would be just like 100% social housing, right?
And I think originally what the Portland Hotel Society was supposed to take over the site.
Well, I think they did take over the site, and now they're like they set up the community garden, which exists right there right now.
They're
running community programming and all that stuff. The site was occupied by a second tent city in July 2016, and it was these activists at this tent city that actually forced a meeting with Mayor Robertson, Gregor Robertson,
the famous meeting.
What happened there?
Yeah, no. So at this 2016 August 2016 meeting, he promised, or he made the commitment, that the site would be used for 100% welfare / pension rate, community controlled social housing.
Oh, he did a lot more than promise. He signed a large life-size contract written by the community activists and residents in the area, with the it was and then took pictures with them and everything. Yeah. It was more than a promise. It was a public promise. It was a photo op. It was,
a signature.
I'm not sure if that document is permissible in court, but it definitely looked like it may be.
So those people were evicted in like November 2016, but like he promised that they were gonna like, you know, move this process along and like, you know, like they would like reconvene in August, June 2017, right? Fast forward to now, the hearing, it's now being proposed as a mixed-use building, right? I think floor 1 to 3 has, like, commercial and
medical
offices. Yeah, and then, like, the rest of it is, it's a 10-story building. The rest of it is social housing, right? Mm-hmm.
But it's part of it
social housing.
We should talk about this. Yeah. Welfare rate and pension rate and social housing is all, like... No. So those three, so welfare, social, and pension rate is all around $375 a month because that's just under what like a general pension check is, and that's what a welfare check is.
Yeah.
Affordable housing is like affordable it's relative like 1, to the market 000. Value, so that's roughly $900, $1,000, $1,100 sort of thing.
Which is
so
a lot of people
they're proposing that the bottom is commercial, and then part of it is social, and part of it is affordable,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the actual term for that is HILS, housing income limits. So that's the average market rent for an appropriately sized unit.
You're talking about affordable equates to that.
Yes, yeah. So basically, they propose, I think, 50% are going to be welfare or pension rates.
Okay.
And the other 50% of the units are going to be at that average market rate. That was the original proposal, but then someone from the Vancouver Chinatown Foundation kind of surprised everyone on the night of the hearing. But, I mean, you'll hear all about that, I'm sure, in our piece coming up.
Yeah. All right. So
anything? Yeah. So now we're going to turn to this wonderful piece.
Yeah. Just like tune into Democracy Watch for more coverage of this in the future.
And don't forget to hashtag Democracy Watch on Twitter.
Yeah.
Follow us on Instagram.
Follow us. Yeah.
CITR 101.9 FM.
Yeah. All right.
The City of Vancouver held a public hearing on January 16 to propose the rezoning of the long fought over lot on 58 West Hastings. The proposed rezoning would allow for the development of a mixed-use building. The 10-story building would have commercial and medical offices on floors 1 to 3 and 231 units of social housing above that. Over 70 speakers registered to address the City Council. The first few were proponents of the existing housing proposal. The vast majority of speakers, however, were opposed to the existing proposal. Many of them were residents and activists from community organizations in the downtown East Side. They all had one demand.
It needs to be 100% shelter rate housing, and we need to work on it now.
I would like to urge the Council to accept this rezoning. On the condition that you, Mr. Robertson, keep your promise of building 100% welfare and pension rate housing at 58 West Hastings.
Democracy Watch spoke to Queenie Chu, CEO of Success, who was in support of the proposal. She felt that any social housing is better than none.
I'm hoping people would think about it in kind of more long term, looking at increasing, 300 plus units affordable housing or social housing, would definitely is an increase, although that probably was still a way to go to meet the demands of people living in the area. However, at least there is incremental, changes in increasing the pool of social housing. I think it's a good thing. By not doing anything, it might not be supportive in those people who are still, looking for a place to live.
In August 2016, Vancouver's Mayor Gregor Robertson made a widely publicized commitment to members of the Downtown Eastside community.
We've come to an agreement to make sure that the 58 West Hastings site is 100% social housing.
Robertson also signed a makeshift agreement which stated that the city committed to 100% welfare, pension rate, community-controlled social housing at 58 West Hastings. Many speakers referenced this promise and noted that by developing a mixed-use building, that promise would be broken. The agreement was unveiled while local activist Vincent Tao was speaking.
Yeah, right now I was going to do a clever thing and unfurl the agreement that you signed, Mr. Robertson, but Bruce didn't let me pass the door. Janie, could you unfurl it? There's an agreement that you signed, Mr. Robertson, where you agreed to build 100% welfare and pension rate housing in 58 West Hastings, that it's also community controlled. Do you remember this? You see it. Thank you. If there's anything, I would assume if there's anything that you suits honor, it's a contract. So.
Some people mentioned older promises made by Robertson. Elaine DeRocher, downtown Eastside poverty activist, spoke about this.
Should I let her speak before me or after me?
You go for it. She can.
While I'm here?
You guys around, yeah.
Okay, so I've resided in downtown Eastside for 10 years now. I was there when we voted for you, how you spoke so highly of what you were going to do in the downtown Eastside. Look at me when I'm speaking to you, please. Remember when you came down and promised us all these promises? Housing, no more shelters, no more homelessness. Do you remember when you did all that, Robertson? Do you remember? He came down to the downtown Eastside about approximately 10 years ago, maybe 8, asking for our votes and how sweet he was on all the promises that he made us, and how today the promises are all broken, and how he's resigning so he doesn't have to step up to the plate.
Erica Grant was one of the many activists who pointed out that the development would be a step back from the city's commitment to reconciliation and Indigenous people.
This 58 West Hastings, you know, once was powwow grounds, and now housing is going up, but it needs to be 100% shelter rate housing, and we need to work on it now.
I know the city has promised that they were going to reconcile with the First Nations community, and this would be a really big opportunity for them to do that, to get all of the First Nations, the Indigenous people, off the streets of the downtown Eastside.
Many of the speakers believed that it would be possible to make 100% social housing based on the concrete promise made in 2016. Democracy Watch talked to David Eddy, the CEO from Vancouver Native Housing Society. He supported the proposal as it stood and suggested that Robertson's 2016 pledge was overly optimistic.
My actual intended question for you was, you spoke about 100% welfare rate housing being not possible, like an unrealistic expectation. A lot of the speakers here tonight have mentioned the mayor's promise back in 2016 to commit to that on this specific site. What are your thoughts on that, given that you're saying like that's not a realistic dream at all?
Well, the mayor also promised to end homelessness when he was first elected, and then he changed that to end street homelessness, and street homelessness has gotten worse. So his ability to predict actual outcomes is a little bit questionable. He tries hard. The city is very, very supportive of social housing. The mayor is supportive of it. I give him kudos for that. But sometimes he shoots from the lip.
Which is politicians overpromising as usual.
Yeah, I don't think he did it in that way, because I think he was pretty sincere, but he wasn't being practical.
I mean, would you think that there should be some sort of retraction of that promise? Or do you think the community here that's saying, we want you to uphold that, have an unrealistic expectation of the city?
They could also say, we want you to turn back time and end homelessness in 2015. It ain't going to happen. And, you know, I'm sure he took a kicking tonight for... you know, because he signed that paper, I don't know what he was thinking at the time, but, you know, I guess he was looking at things through rose-colored glasses, I'm guessing. But I don't think he was just being a typical politician.
Yeah, I guess it does show
And the guy's not running next term, so what are you going to do? You know, you can't really hold him to it in that sense that we're not going to elect you again because you lied to us. He's out of here.
Gene Swanson, candidate from last year's municipal elections for city council, weighed in on the fact that the current proposal did not match
with Robertson's 2016 promise to make it 100% affordable.
How do you feel about the fact that the current proposal doesn't match up with the mayor's August 2016 promise to make it 100% affordable, or welfare or shelter rate?
Well, I think it's disgusting. Yeah, they can find money for the art gallery, they can find money for the Arbutus Corridor, they can find money for the Olympic Village, for bike lanes, but when people are dying in the streets, or as Erica said, using drugs or alcohol because they have to sleep with rats, then, oh, there's no money. We don't have any money. Our hands are tied. I don't buy it.
Many in support of social housing argued that social mix was not better and that it actually contributes to gentrification. Jean Swanson commented on that.
And yeah, I've heard a lot today that social mix is also contributing to gentrification. How exactly does that happen?
So take the example of Woodward's. Actually, it's on the Carnegie Action Project website. There's a bunch of stuff on that. So Woodward's is a social mix project. It has 536 condos, it has 125 welfare rate places, and it has some mixed in moderate income social housing. So what happened when Woodward's opened in 2009? Before 2009, most of the SROs surrounding Woodward were renting at the welfare shelter rate. By 2012, they were up to about $500 or $600 a month. Now they're $1,200. The Metropole is, I saw somebody that said there was a room at the Metropole for over $1,400. This is for an SRO.
Laurel Gaudet spoke about why it's so important to have 100% social housing for people in the downtown east side.
Okay, so I mentioned when I spoke to council that I suffer from mental illness, and I've also suffered from addiction in the past, but I'm doing really well now, so I'm quite stable, and I just wanted to say that people can recover from addiction and or mental illness. But if you don't have housing, reasonable housing, you don't have a chance. And so, you know, that's why it's so important, and that's why we're stressing 100% welfare and pension rate at 58 West Hastings.
As the proposal stands, Vancouver Chinatown Foundation would be the leaseholder of the lot on behalf of the City of Vancouver, the property owners, with Vancouver Coastal Health as the prospective healthcare operator. Vancouver Affordable Housing Agency was also a partner. I am Alamdi Alanion from Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, this is Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. We just listened to an original report on the proposed housing development of a community garden located at 58 West Hastings. Now we're going to discuss the topic a little bit. So News Collective leader Alex and I were there on the ground. Supreme dear leader Alex and I were there on the ground on Tuesday, and we had some great production help from our other comrade Olamide Olanyen.
Fire. Yeah, red is the blood of angry men, you know?
I guess, I mean, I can... There. Sorry, like what do you say?
No, nothing.
Excuse me. Supreme leader is speaking. So, okay. I wanted to talk about... one of the last speakers in this piece, David Eddy, who is a member of the, or the CEO, I believe, right? Of the Vancouver
yes.
Native Housing Society.
Yes.
So he made an interesting point that it isn't necessarily economically sustainable to have 100% social housing, so housing at welfare rates,
yeah.
For this housing site at 58 West Hastings. So, I mean, basically, the issue of being short of money to build this came up a lot, and a lot of speakers cited that money could be drawn from the Vancouver Police Department's budget
yeah.
or through
tax.
An implemented mansion yeah. tax, which is part of the policy for council that Jean Swanson ran on, who was also featured in this piece. So that was to construct the housing, I believe. But in terms of, you know, paying for the land on an ongoing basis and, basically just meeting basic costs for, like, electricity and heat, what do you guys think? Do you think that David Eddy is making a reasonable point, or do you think that the city could reallocate funds?
Well, I think he's making like a good faith argument at least, because like he's been working in like the downtown east side for like 30 something years, right? And like he definitely is coming from like a more pragmatic sensibility, where he's like he really like he would prefer for 100% social housing, but he's also looking at like just in the past, looking at the past, all the projects that they've been building, right? Dealing with like bureaucrats, he mentioned a lot of like it's very very hard to like pass through any kind of legislation that like, you know. There's donors, there's a lot of that stuff. He didn't necessarily mention donors, but like that's like a lot of these bureaucrats and like politicians already have like are elected on a certain mandate, and like it's you can't just like throw all your voters under the bus, right? So it's one of those things where like you have to like be really consider all that other stuff, right?
Yeah, I think this site has become a symbol for a broader debate happening about what the government's role is in providing affordable social housing and in tackling social problems like homelessness. I think that, you know, on its face, it would be great if the government could, government of Vancouver could find enough money to fund this building, 100% social housing. And I'm sure that they could, to be honest. They could divert some funds from here or there. Yeah. But what about the next lot? And what about the next lot? You know, if... or the next development, or what about the people that are not housed? If the city, I mean, what David Eddy is saying is that if the city just provided housing for everyone, that it would go broke, basically.
And yet, I don't think that's true.
Oh, really?
Because the city of Vancouver is incredibly wealthy, and there are a lot of really wealthy people, and wealth redistribution is a very real option. I mean, you know, we're, I'm calling you guys comrades, so perhaps my political leanings are evident, but I mean, I don't think that's necessarily true. And I think, like, in a way, you're right, Ryan, this is a symbol of just the housing crisis generally, but also it's a bit unique, can't we say, because Robertson went down there in 2016 and signed
exactly.
a literal makeshift contract and looked people in the eye and who were living in tents in this garden and said, I will build housing for you by June 2017.
And then turning around.
I
think in his heart, in his deepest heart of hearts, he wished that he could have built housing for all those people. But
he also...
He shouldn't have made that promise if he couldn't have kept it. Well, I agree.
I think there's...
That. What was the Metro article recently that said that Vision gets...
Vision gets $297,000 for the like last election. But... They also didn't win, like they got like the fifth position, right? So
yeah, just to step in. That's I think
who so are that, you?
That's me.
Are you?
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm just an outsider. I just got this really nice piece on social housing that you guys were reporting on. No, I'm a News Collective member too, Rahmatullah Sheikh. You brought up a good point on the Metro article, and that's, I think, you're referring to the real estate industry funding about
75%
of Vision Vancouver's campaign. And that's something that Gene Swanson retweeted too.
Yeah.
That's an interesting point, because we're talking about the viability and the feasibility of building a 100% social housing, but how much of lobbying power is going behind the real estate here? I mean, what's in it for the real estate developers to have 100% social housing? Because they're going to be working on margins. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Catering to a segment which is in the bracket of $375 is not really profitable, mm-hmm. right? So, it's going to be sensitive. He made
sustainable.
Gregor Robertson made a steep promise. And let's see if he... If he goes
and,
through with it, right?
I mean, we can't know what's in good old Gregor's heart. Ryan,
I
you're an optimist,
some,
and
I could do
being
some investigating
generous.
If you want.
Well, you are pretty good
into
at
his
it.
Heart of hearts.
But let's be real. If you continue to make promises that you fully don't fulfill, you're setting up a trend, and you're gaining a reputation for your words meaning nothing. Yeah. I mean, his promises are hollow, and so I don't know if he really cares or really thought that this could happen.
Yeah, and that definitely has like deep political implications on his career, right? It's like if he ever like runs for any other kind of position, he's not going for a mayor anymore, right? But if he ever plans to have a future career, right, that's always going to be like a stain on his record that he doesn't keep promises. Like people are going to keep like, you know, showing that it's literally just like it's a big stain on his record, at least.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah. So you guys were on the ground there, and I'm really interested in seeing how was his body language like? Because he was listening, to those
Spicy.
Complaints and people grilling him. But then deep down, he knows
yeah.
that he's going to be stepping down. I mean, rather, he's going to be making his transition
totally.
Outwards, and he's not. He doesn't need to make any of those promises anymore
totally.
To stay in power or to run for another.
Well, you'll notice that we beeped out a little comment in that piece, which is basically he was taking a beating. If anyone followed my Instagram story, Bud Light Lime is my account. It had a video of his face. I zoomed into his face.
Yeah.
We weren't in the actual room because it was too full, so we were in like the outside waiting room, but they have a video of which shows goes back and forth between the speakers and the city council, and particularly Gregor Robertson, who is being addressed, who the speakers are addressing. So anyway, we could see what was happening through this monitor and we could hear it. And I was like zooming in, like filming his face, and just like, you know, he tries to look at people, and then sometimes his head would sink down in kind of an exhausted motion, and you know, he'd pull it back up. And
he sat there pretty stone-faced the whole
yeah.
time,
yeah,
just taking it
just
and keeping his eye on the clock.
If you notice, there's
yeah,
like a
there was a comment
there
that
go.
Was made
like
by a certain person. Was it Erica?
It was Elaine.
No, it was Elaine.
Yeah.
And she said, look at me when I'm talking to you.
Oh, yeah. She snapped at him.
Yes.
To which the crowd surrounding us in the waiting room applauded.
Yeah. I found it interesting because, like, Elaine was actually there. She mentioned that she was homeless at that
yes.
point when, like, 8 to 10 years ago, Gregor literally came to the downtown east side and, like, charmed them mm-hmm. and was like, I'm going to – the other comment or the other promise that he didn't – that he kind of broke is – the end homelessness by 2015, right? And like that was
yeah.
one of the things that he kind of ran on, and you know, he did not, and that's what she, like, she and a lot of other people were like taking the task on, is that you broke that promise then, and like even now you're also, you just keep breaking promises, you know, and like when does it end, and like now you're going to like you know, just not face any consequences because you're not actually coming back, right? I think it might be interesting to like look at the fact that, like, I don't know, it's like one of the a bunch of the activists that were there actually also talked about the fact that, particularly, I think, Listen Chen from Alliance Against Displacement, and she mentioned that if this were happening, like if the amount of people that are homeless or dying on the street was any other demographic, mm-hmm. it would be like a national crisis.
Absolutely.
And so it's one of those things where, like, there's a lot of people homeless that particular area is like has like a lot of high amounts, like probably in the entirety of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Of like just like
it's highly ghettoized.
Exactly.
It's the most ghettoized area in Canada.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So like it's one of those things where like if you're looking at wants and needs, like
yeah.
and money for like real estate profitable, like if you think about it, that money, like you can't find that money if it was like any other
Absolutely.
Kind of crisis. You could see like any kind of like crisis that happened in the downtown east side, it's
yeah.
like the fentanyl, opioid,
mm-hmm.
Drug, any of that stuff. As it doesn't get as much attention as like any other type
yeah.
of crisis that
well,
would
and
require attention.
For example, like an article recently, I forget where, brought up like when the flu was really bad this year recently, there was like this whole plan to address it. There were like, it was like an emergency, like 300 people died. And we can look at, you know, how I think we listed how many people had died in headlines earlier, but like far more than that have died from fentanyl in Vancouver. It's here it is. 335 died, or so sorry, with the flu was much less than that. But anyway, so like it's the way it's dealt with as a medical crisis is totally different.
Yeah, there's definitely a selective blindness and a lack of political will to really take the steps necessary to.
Well summed up.
Yeah, it's also like interesting how there's like the reconciliation aspect to it. Like I think Erica
yeah.
Grand and I think also Elaine as well also talked about how. Like the city has been, you know, promising to like reconcile with like Indigenous people for
yeah.
a long time. They mentioned that 1 in 18 of the homeless are actually Indigenous as well.
Which I think it's a
yeah.
lot higher than that.
It might like it's probably like always probably like I don't know. I don't want to make any claims about that, but like yeah, it's just like that no, but
no.
but it's like Elaine was the one that like mentioned that, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm
pretty
peace,
sure it's a
but,
lot. But anyway, yeah.
I believe that the stat is 1 in 18 people in the downtown east
well,
side
right.
are
that's
homeless.
Right.
Are homeless.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Not
well,
necessarily Indigenous, but
okay.
just 1 in 18 people in the downtown east side are homeless.
I see.
Oh,
gotcha.
Okay, that makes
okay.
more sense.
That makes more
yeah,
sense.
Because
yeah.
it's there's a very
more.
Very high Indigenous population in the downtown east
okay.
side.
Well,
but
I
yeah,
correct
that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Talking about like there were a lot of indigenous activists at City Hall on Tuesday, and someone brought up that, you know, this very site of West 58th, sorry, 58 was West Hastings, was like powwow grounds, you know, 100 years ago. I mean, still is technically, but it's unceded territory now, and it's in control. It's being controlled by the city of Vancouver. And so, I mean, when you start thinking about that, it's just like, how can...
if you wanted to make steps to do that, this is a step backwards. This is like, you're going the wrong direction. You're like on R instead of D, and you're moving backwards, you know? Yeah. So like, you should take your foot off the wheel and think about your decisions, you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. On that note... Thank you very much for listening to Democracy Watch.
Are you cutting us off,
right? I believe so, comrades.
Sorry, do you lead the collective or do I? It's really unclear.
This is a power struggle.
By this time next week.
All right.
Yes, sorry. I guess we still do have some time.
Well, no, I just wanted to also just quickly note that something key to this area is Woodward's, which was an old department store that was demolished in 2009-ish. And in its place was built a new Woodward's complex. It kept the same name, but it has a variety of retail stores. And it also has an SFU art school. And, like, there's a J.J. Bean Coffee. I actually used to work there. But in terms of housing, they had mixed housing. So different the spaces were sold for different prices. Yeah. So, like, there's commercial housing and then there's social housing. And, I mean, I know from, like, being around there all the time and, like, waiting at the bus stop on Hastings, there's a very clear entrance for people who are lower income who are owning or renting spaces in the social housing component. So that was a big argument at this public hearing as well, because the current proposal is for mixed housing as well. But that seems to lead to segregation between social divisions.
Yeah, and Gene Swanson and also Listen Chen also talked about that, saying like they used Woodward as a side of that and mentioned about how like the rent increases were like, oh, like that, the market valuation for the area.
It triggered rent increases in the area.
So you might as well like...
With SROs.
Exactly.
So, the opposition against social mixing, because that contributes to rising prices, rising house, rent prices as well as the gentrification of the area.
Like at least if the entire like Vancouver is like growing in valuation like for like the past few years, right? And it's going to keep going, right? But if you wanted to stave off at least the crisis that's happening right now, right? Mixed social housing and commercial and maybe medical offices is not the best way to go.
Yeah.
All right.
I think we'll leave it there.
Okay, thank you. We have the go-ahead. And thank you very much for listening to Democracy Watch. That's your show for today. This has been CITR 101.9 FM. Sayonara.